ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for the final day. I thank all y'all for your love and support, and I even thank those of you who've protested, including Jimmy Carter, all four members of U2, Paul McCartney, Bishop Desmond Tutu, the family of Nelson Mandela, and of course, Ralph Nader, who shaved his head outside the UN. I'm sorry, it didn't work. I've been here all week. But your kind words have been most appreciated. I want to extend a Stephanie Miller thanks to the great Tony Sorrentino, who has ably been keeping this thing on the rails behind the boards all week.
And luckily yesterday.
And luckily he decided to show up yesterday, which was very kind of you. And I want to thank all the folks at Free Speech TV. The pledge drive has been going well. We'll be telling you more about that. But today, my friends, today's special. Today, you know, it would be easy to sit around and say, hey, we have great guests. So we've had good guests this week. We had Greg Proops here. We had in one day, Stuttering John and Marianne Williamson. We've had stars of MTV. We've had all kinds of fascinating comics and journalists. But today, coming back for the second time this week, we have the one, the only, the Alpha and the Omega, the Ayatollah of rock and roll, the man who was kicked out of Wu-Tang Clan for being too damned hardcore, Rick Overton.
Yo, player.
Good morning. It's the Emmy-winning Rick Overton. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back on the show. Always a pleasure to come back and see you on my side of Earth for a little bit.
Yes, I know. It's very nice to be back in L.A. I did live in L.A. for 10 years, and it's hard being a political comic in L.A. I tried to be a political stand-up here, which should give you a rough idea of how well-intentioned but naive I was during this period. doing political stand-up in a town where they're proud not to know who the mayor is.
Yeah.
Aren't you guys mad about financial meltdown? Aren't you mad about Wall Street fraud? Aren't you mad about AIG? Bro, I don't listen to hip-hop. No! So yeah. Coming back is always a pleasure.
There's some detachment like that. There's a lot of New Yorkers here, too.
I know. So. No, it's actually the thing about L.A. is it's like any relationship. You get out of it what you put into it. And when you want to have a good relationship with L.A., you will. And I love living here, and I love coming back. It's always a pleasure.
I miss walking.
Yeah?
I miss walking out of necessity. It's not, you know, if you're walking in New York, it can look like you're just someone, you know, going somewhere. You could be very important in walking in New York. But if you're seen walking in L.A., it means something's gone horribly wrong with your career.
You know how sad that is? We lived in Santa Monica for a long time. And then after like 7 years of being in Santa Monica, where you never leave the house because people have got to drive all the way to you, we moved into Hollywood. And the last few years I lived here, I lived in Hollywood, and I walked everywhere. I went from filling up my car twice a week to filling up my car once a month. And I would have friends stop, and they'd pull over next to me and say, is everything all right?
Yeah, is everything all right? Where's your car? Where's your protective, like, hermit crab shell? You're soft. Well, humans are soft shell. We can't just walk around. Angeline, she just jumps out for a second to go to Whole Foods and runs back into the pink shell.
It's true. It's true. And I am a true New Yorker, but it's always fun to come back here. And it's been a great week. We've had great guests, and it's always wonderful to just be in L.A. and be away from the 16 snowfalls we've had in New York, and I've done some stand-up, and I should do the first of many plugs for the show that we are doing tonight, Rick Overton. You and I are doing a Comedy Nation show at the Church in Ocean Park, which still lets us be heathens, and that's tonight from 8 to 9:30. I will put the information about that up on my website, on Facebook and on Twitter, and that's going to be a great lineup, including Bill Dwyer, who is just a scandalously funny, twisted man, Felicia Michaels, Kathy Ladman, who I love, and Matt Kirshen, our British friend who joined us on the show a couple days ago.
Right. He's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a great lineup, and it's a really fun panel.
It's a fun panel. I think Chris Bono is going to open for us with some songs. And, you know, the topic is on the progressive agenda, which means I get to make fun of Republicans a lot. But the topic on the progressive agenda is going to be both what do progressives need to do to win elections and what do progressives need to do beyond winning elections to just make America better. Thomas Jefferson said, the care of human life and not its destruction is the first and only object of good government. And I think progressives are so focused often on how do we beat these damn Republicans that sometimes once we get in office, it's hard to have any kind of progress, especially because we're facing so much obstruction. And we're in the golden age of moderate improvements we're calling reform. And it's hard out here for a lib. And how do you actually take the action to make our good ideas more than just fantasies?
Yeah, I'd say that the liberal community is kind of like been PTSD traumatized by 30 years of what they thought they built being slapped out of their hand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And thinking that the old way, massive street protests draw the result. It used to be the outrage about it having occurred at all would so scare the popularity hounds on the opposition side that they would then adjust to regain that popularity. Now the really creepy part is when people that used to seek popularity no longer do. Question becomes why?
Yeah.
How come you're so confident now you don't need that popularity part anymore?
Well, and again, it's like the Fox News bubble is a minority of Americans, but they're much more organized than the majority of Americans. We're not all on the same page, but Fox News is. And that's why they're very effective in midterms. And, you know,
I would say right now the right is breaking apart like the glaciers.
Yes and no. I mean,
giant glacial chunks breaking away to this subcategoric party, the Tea Party.
Well,
I'd
like to see that happen. But let's look at a few things going on here. The Chamber of Commerce has said that for the first time in their history, they're going to start funding incumbent Republicans against Tea Party challengers. The Wall Street wing of the GOP is putting its foot down against these unruly upstarts in the Tea Party. You now see Mitch McConnell, who is deeply unpopular, leading his Tea Party challenger, Matt Bevin, by over 42 points. And it seems like the GOP is starting to squelch him. Now, I want to see what Ted Cruz and the rest of the illiterati do about this. But in the meantime, it is fun watching the Civil War. But again, they rally the forces better than us.
And if that's absolutely
Democrats
right.
Democrats are sitting around saying, oh, Hillary in 2016. Well, guess what, suckers? Hillary's not going to be able to do anything when the GOP takes back the House and Senate, this November. So the way I see it, there's like 6 months for the Democrats to rally the base. Democrats don't have a CPAC. They don't have a 24-hour propaganda network. I'm sorry, MSNBC is not like Fox. They are not as relentless. MSNBC exercises critical thinking against their own party. MSNBC is not on 24/7. MSNBC has more conservatives on it than Fox News has. I want to say that again. MSNBC has more real conservatives. When you look at Joe Scarborough, Michael Steele, when you look at, Pat Buchanan used to be there, but Fox News doesn't have real conservatives. They have neocons. It was everyone who cheered and cheered for everything Bush and Cheney did and cheered and cheered the insane spending habits of Bush and Cheney.
They're just actors. They're even pretending to do that. I don't think... I mean, you can start to buy your own crap long enough that you start to think you are it, but I think when they get home, it's a whoo-hoo, it's a party, and none of that really applies.
Well,
you know?
Our number here is 1-800-STEPH-12, and we want you to call in and tell us, what can the Democrats do to turn this around? How can the Democrats avoid a proper shellacking come November? And Chad is already on the phone from Idaho. Chad, you are on with Rick Overton. Chad? Are you there, Chad? It's not me this time. Chad, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
There's Chad.
That was me. Hi, Chad.
Hey, I just want to say that these ads write themselves, and the DNCs, they should be sued for malpractice right now. You know, where is the ad of the old couple who is praising Obamacare because it closed her donor hole?
Yep. Where indeed?
Where is the ad of the mother taking care of a sick child and the TV in the background has a right-wing lies and she nods her head in disapproval and shuts it off?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the ad of Christ feeding the 5,000 with these Republicans in the background saying and demonizing the poor? These ads write themselves.
I agree.
And I don't understand why the Democrats never, ever fight back, and every liberal I talk to has the same complaint. And I would like to bottle that with, we've gone to every sexy liberal in Seattle, and if you haven't seen it, go see it.
Oh, really? You've been to all of them, huh?
Absolutely. We've gone to the last couple, and I am looking forward to your next date in Seattle. I hope you do it.
I can't wait. You might see me on my own in Seattle before I come back with Sexy Liberal, but I love playing there, and I did my solo show there 2 years ago, and I just love the audiences. And we had Dan Savage join us, of course, at our last show at the Paramount, and we sold out the Moor twice. It's great audiences there, and I love Seattle. Rick Overton and I did a movie in Seattle. I got to live there for a couple months once.
It was a fun time.
You you talk to Democrats, how tough is it to get just a couple people to create an echo chamber?
Why won't they do it?
I want you to do the messaging for the DNC. I mean, you got it, Rick.
I have written these ideas to them. I've written several ideas to them. They never respond.
Yeah, there's layering of blue dogism. Sometimes it's the inactivists, I call them, you know. they sit in waiting, and just when it's their turn to move, they just simply don't.
Yeah.
And that's the damage they do, and all they do is shrug and go, a thing came up, I had to do a thing, or I couldn't. And when, you know, it's like hiring, it's like bank robbers that pay off the bank guard to pretend to sleep when they come in and rob the place.
Exactly.
Well, I have never heard a Democrat say that they closed the donut hole. And well, those ads should have been playing in Florida during that special election 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans are like an alien invasion, and the Democrats are like UFO skeptics during an alien invasion.
they're called Blue Dog Democrats.
Blue Dog Democrats.
And they're called Blue Dogs because they're from blue states, and they're bitches. So that's why. Hey, Chad, what a great call. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Have a great weekend. Time to go to break. The phones are starting to light up. So we want to talk about what can the Democrats do? What is the progressive agenda, both to get elected and to govern? We want to know your thoughts with the great Rick Overton on The Stephanie Miller Show, 1-800-STEPH-12. Give us a call.
She's your human happy pill.
Happy, happy, joy, joy, joy.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
I can't believe how great this sounds.
I love Nina.
I love Nina Simone.
So much.
It's so great to hear other takes on songs like
that. Yeah. You want to hear a great take on this song? The Blind Boys of Alabama. And this is for all the people out there in Stephland. The Blind Boys of Alabama did a cover of Amazing Grace, but they sing Amazing Grace to the melody of House of the Rising Sun. Tony, look it up right now. You're not going to believe it. Right. We'll play it later on. And I want to thank you for playing the Beatles' It's All Too Much, one of the most underrated Beatles songs and George Harrison songs out of the last break. Bob Gallagher says, thanks for playing It's All
it's
Too Much.
That's a great
one of my fave George songs. Yeah. And yep. Paul sings a bit of She Loves You in the end of it, too.
Ah,
if you make it to the very end when it gets all psychedelic and crazy, yeah. Paul starts singing She Loves You. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a great Beatles song. Hey, I'm John Fugelsang, chasing the girls away with our classic rock talk, and it's the Stephanie Miller Show. Thank all y'all for calling in. We are here with the great Naval Tony Sorrentino on the board and Emmy Award-winning actor, comedian. I saw a movie last week you weren't in. It was outrageous. You weren't in it, but...
I was up for that, but they went a different way.
Jude Law was, so it was covered, but still. Rick Overton, you were in, Groundhog Day, Airplane 2.
Coming up in the new movie, Sean Wayans' Haunted House 2. I got a really funny part in that.
Right on. You steal all of Steven Soderbergh's The Informant. Every scene you're in, you steal as Matt Damon's boss.
It was an honor to be part of that fine film, which is a record of the last time a CEO was perp-walked out of his facility. In the history of America.
Yeah.
And since then, the bosses who do crooked stuff are untouched as of that event.
You were on Lost. You were on Seinfeld. You were on, my God, how dare you, sir? How dare you?
Yeah. And then coming up on the 20th on Rake.
On Rake with Greg Kinnear on
Fox. Greg Kinnear. He's magnificent.
Well, it's great to have you here. You're one of my favorite. And the great Von Seal at Get Real Von Seal on Twitter writes, I heart hardcore Rick Overton. He is president of Comedy Nation. Also on next ex-husband list. So there's that to look forward to.
Hey.
Right on. By the way, the tweets are rolling in. Neon tweets to us, the right repeat their views every day as if it were the first time every time until people have it memorized. Hashtag effective lies. And Dale tweets.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about that. Once enough of you all memorize the same wording, people start to go, wait a second. You're all using exactly the same wording. Yeah. What's that about?
Dale tweets to us, agree with that last caller, totally, Dems don't attack. It would be easy and would work. And you know what? We saw during the government shutdown, this Democratic Congress and president show a level of backbone we'd never seen. We saw them resist and not capitulate to any of the GOP demands in the shutdown when the GOP essentially demanded enact our platform from 2012, even though we lost. And I had so much respect for how the Democrats stood against it. We saw Harry Reid start to have a bit of backbone when it came to standing up against the filibuster law, the filibuster rules for presidential appointments.
Right.
And you know what? People want to be inspired. If Barack Obama doesn't want to fight, and I respect why he can't get angry, I do respect that. And this guy's been a rock. I mean, you think about how Clinton was in the face of all the barrages about the women, and that was all true, and Clinton was still a rock. The way this guy has been a rock in face of all the lies about him, the lies the GOP has thrown at him. And if you want to know how much the GOP throws lies at Barack Obama, talk to an actual socialist. Talk to an extreme left-winger and hear what their real critiques of Obama are.
Yeah, Jeff's not a real... Yeah, I mean, I tell you, Obama is in the middle of a monster's belly, and he is trying to keep a lot of different sides happy at once. But I think anyone in the role of president is going to encounter saying one thing and then having being disabused of that misconception.
Indeed.
In a private meeting. It seems like a lot of times he says one thing and he's pulled aside and had new things explained.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Rick Overton and I are doing a show tonight in Santa Monica, California about the progressive agenda, and Comedy Nation's a really fun format. We'll explain that later on in the show. But I'm really glad we're discussing the progressive agenda for today's show, because as I said in the last break, it's really two different things. It's the agenda to get elected and the agenda to govern in spite of the overwhelming opposition we're facing from the all-you-can-obstruct menu the GOP has given us. And, Rick, Stephanie Miller fans, they're calling in.
Look at the board light up.
These people have solutions. Woo! Keith is calling us from Milwaukee. Keith, you're on the Steph Show with Rick. Good morning.
Keith.
Hey, guys, you sound so crisp and wide awake for so early in the morning.
Well, thank you.
Big cup of joe.
Yeah,
called speed.
Over there in Stephanie's home office.
Yes. Well, Stephanie left some little treats for us on top of the door frames, so... You know what I'm saying?
And apparently the dogs didn't get them.
No, although I wish you'd been here yesterday to see the look on Greg Proops's face when this brontosaurus with fur walks in the room. He had
idea. Yeah, I'm in Wisconsin, where if you like elections, come to Wisconsin. We've been dealing with this nonsense now for the last 4 years, and I'll try not to be too shocked on here, but there's some things I want to bring up here that
Please.
We need to do. Number one, there's three little words that I hate hearing from progressives every time I bring up something about, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, which is, I hope so.
That is so
whiny, and it's just, you know, they're just resigning to the fact that we can't get things done. We have to realize that we can get things done. And, you know, the Democrats have gotten things done.
I was saying, we are disheartened because we are collectively, and everyone goes, well, not me. He's not talking about me. And that could be the case. But I think collectively, a lot of the progressive movement is PTSD, traumatized from watching the sort of blitzkrieg of having everything that they thought was hard fought and won yanked away again and done with such speed that it obviously had been put in place and laid in wait until its chance when it could all pop goes the weasel at once, which is kind of what has happened in the takeover. And that's the way a blitz works. You go so fast, no one knows what to, especially if they've been put. And I use the analogy of H.G. Wells's Time Machine. The blonde, vegetarian, sort of human
Eloy
were just being prepped by the Morlocks underground because they don't know how to defend themselves. They're cattle humans, and they're very easy to hypnotize, walk in, and be eaten by the cannibal species that lives in shadows and lies in underground.
Nice.
And has religion.
Rod Taylor, with that good-looking Eloy, eventually started a rebellion.
That's it. Until in standard, Avatar fashion, a white man shows up and saves everything.
Keith, we got to go to break. I thank you very much for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. What a pleasure. Have a great weekend. And the phones are
you
beginning
too.
To light up. We'll be taking your calls all morning at 800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. It's Friday. Kids, get happy. We'll be right back. From the True Blood soundtrack. Keep it going.
Oh, well, I love you, pretty baby. You're the only
one. Oh, I did hear this.
Yeah, it's a very creepy, spooky song. Bob Dylan with Beyond Here Lies Nothing from the album Together Through Life, famously used in the finale, I think, of True Blood Season 2 or Season 3. It's on the soundtrack album, but a very cool Bob song because, hey, it's Classic Rock Friday because I get to be here. We'll have some hip-hop and some metal and some country as the day goes. No metal, but we'll have some country and some hip-hop as the day goes by. Of course, you remember the famous we were talking about the Bob Newhart joke before, when it, about country music, where Bob Newhart said, "I would never denigrate fans of country music." And if you're a fan of country music, denigrate means to put down. So, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're taking your
calls.
There's
Willie Nelson, too, just to say, you know, he keeps, like, a cool edge. In the
Lucinda Williams might be the best songwriter in America. I mean, and she's such a great country artist, she can't get played on Nashville radio. Same with Johnny Cash for the last 40 years of his life. And when you think about it, country and hip-hop have a lot in common. They're both uniquely American art forms. They were born out of poverty. They both became music of poor rural or urban folks that achieved mainstream popularity and was eventually co-opted by the record industry and led to radio being flooded with clones. The reason why
all the coolest things stem out of a folk root where it speaks
or blues.
Gospel. And comedy, country western, and blues all have one thing in common. It's all complaining to a rhythm.
Yeah, well, that's hip-hop and country at their best, but you wouldn't know it from today's radio because we've seen both art forms. That's the most bitter thing they have in common. Hip-hop and country have just been co-opted by record industries that just market clones for profit. And that's why, you know, Tom Petty said real country music, not what passes for country music today, which is basically bad rock and a fiddle. If you want to hear, there's a lot, you know, when I hear someone say, I like all music except rap, or I like everything except country, I'm like, no, you don't know good rap, you don't know good country, and you wouldn't know it from Top 40 radio.
There's always the Mozart to Salieri ratio.
Exactly.
One Mozart to seven Salieris.
Yeah, so I guess once
or 100 Salieris.
Indeed. And there's good country music, man. Jason Isbell had a great album last year. There's lots of good stuff. So,
yeah, right.
But today we're not talking about music, we're talking about the Progressive Agenda, and we're taking your calls all morning at 1-800-STEPH-12. Rick and I are doing a show tonight in Santa Monica all about the Progressive Agenda. On this very topic, and how do progressives win elections, how do they govern, and even more importantly, and this is why I want you to call 1-800-STEPH-12, how can progressives wake up our Republican brothers and sisters from the Matrix? Because y'all know the GOP does not serve the average social conservative. Fox News does not serve the average social conservative. Social conservatives are suckered into supporting an agenda designed only to redistribute wealth to the upper
1%. They serve you the same way a giant glass cathedral evangelist, an arena evangelist, cares about the people in the arena.
Exactly.
It's about that ratio. He just needs your money. He needs you to believe something, and he just needs to have you out of his life when he gets in the car.
And I want some conservatives who are not millionaires to call us at 800-STEPH-12, because if you're a Republican and you're not a millionaire and you're fighting for the GOP, you're a sucker, my friends. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren care about you a lot more than John Boehner, Ted Cruz, or Fox News ever will.
That's right.
And Joan is calling us from Nashville. Good morning, Joan. It's a beautiful Friday. You are on the Stephanie Miller Show with Rick Overton.
Yes, I just want to express my frustration with the way the Democrats get out their message.
Please.
Recently, I saw Susan Sarandon and a lot of other Hollywood stars, and I think they were speaking with Frank Luntz. I think he might be the guy who gives the
Spinmeister
conservatives their talking points every day.
Yes.
And he was telling them how they needed to improve the way they get their message out, and they just, you know, poo-hooed him. They didn't want to hear what he had to
say. That's very true.
But the conservatives are very effective. You can hear it from early morning news until late at night. They're all repeating the same message over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And in this age of Twitter, where you have to communicate in, 140 characters or less, the Democrats and the progressives are still trying to talk to people in paragraphs.
We're talking in paragraphs in a soundbite age. You are so right, Joe.
One or two simple sentences. Try to do a compound sentence or a paragraph, and you lose them.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats have to learn how to speak in what I call kitchen table ease, the kind of language that people talk to each other or they use when they're talking to each other at the kitchen table. You know, bumper sticker type of speech, something short and to the point and easy to remember. Like the slogan that Obama used during his first campaign, "Yes, we can." That was easy to remember. People understood. understood where he was coming from. And just the other day, I heard him mention at the end of a speech in front of a group of people, vote a pay raise. Now, to me, that
give America a pay raise
for the general elections coming up in 14. But you won't hear it again.
Right. Yeah, I got to say,
the media won't favor.
I don't see where they're coming from. They're not thinking.
Well, I think you're exactly right.
The conservatives are smarter than the Democrats.
No, I wouldn't say that, Joan, and I do thank you for the call. You made a lot of brilliant points. I wouldn't say they're smarter, but I would say they're more easily manipulated, and I would say the conservative puppet masters are more easily at manipulating their vote. You know, Democrats, there's a reason Noam Chomsky doesn't tweet, because he can't condense it down to 140 characters.
Yeah, and because of that, there is a segment of people that just won't get his message that way.
Yeah.
And it is the price of living in the early days of the 21st century as a completely new way to communicate starts to sort itself out. We will watch things falling away. And I wanted to point out that on the progressive side, we have something that is, I think, an unfortunate glitch in being civil. And that is what I call the incredulity loop. And here's how it works. Is the constant, I can't believe they did this. I cannot believe they did that. Can you believe that they, I'm reading this about the Republic. Can you believe that they, a lot of inability
like
to
believe. Like food stamps or something.
Yeah, but if you look at it just facing the other way and take away the separate topic, it's always an inability to believe something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't believe it, you certainly can't get up and do anything about
it.
So it locks you in place to keep saying how you're startled and can't
believe. Good semantic tip. That really, really is.
Yeah, start believing it.
Yeah, and I disagree with
it. There's been enough examples that this is a recidivist set of actions.
I think it's got to be all about blunt force sound bites. You know,
yeah,
you can't
she's
stand
right about that. She's really right.
You can't stand up for Main Street when you're on all fours for Wall Street.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty, but it gets the point across.
That's right.
And again, and I want Republican folks to call in at 800-STEP-12 and tell us how we're wrong. Hey, Jeff is calling us from Chicago on Democratic messaging. Good morning, Jeff. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, hi there, John.
Hey.
I was there for that first sexy liberal outing in Madison, Wisconsin, and then the first one in Chicago.
Oh, wow. So you were there for the drunken revelry of our first show in Madison. We're going back in 2 weeks. That show's already sold out. I was hoping we'd add a second. It didn't happen.
I've been trying to get my Chicago ticket so I can go again.
You got to come. April 26th at the Chicago Theater. Jim's going to be there. Chris is going to be there. We're not going to have a giant blues band on stage with us this year. That was fun, but it's going to be just about the comedy. So I hope we see you there.
Well, I'm not coming in because those guys that were up there in the blues were friends of mine. So
right on, yeah.
It's just Chicago Blues All-Stars. You're not
Chicago
bringing
Blues
back.
All-Stars That's with Dan.
Mm-hmm. You come to my town, you don't invite the Blues All-Stars up on stage?
They came out with us. They came out with us twice. I don't know. It's between Stephanie and him.
Well, at any rate, a couple of good slogans I think we keep forgetting in all the Obamacare discussion, as you've been saying. We continue to make excuses for Obamacare instead of saying, hey, your Tea Party congressman loves his Obamacare. Why does he want to steal yours?
Well, let's be
because
fair about let's
guys
be fair about this.
Had Obamacare before it was Obamacare.
Well, no, it has changed. They had true socialized health care before, and thanks to a Republican, Chuck Grassley, and the Grassley Amendment, that
yeah,
made
don't lose it, John, in the details.
No,
we're just talking about it. They got it. We want it.
Yeah, but if you're going to use a talking point, it can't be one that's easily knocked down by Republicans. And they could say that they didn't want their Obamacare that was mandated into a law. Now they've got it. Mm-hmm. You know, I would actually go further and say that Americans deserve the same health care Congress had, which was single payer. They had, you know, socialized medicine is what Congress really had. It's what Israel has. It's what England has. It's what Japan and Germany have. I don't understand why our other capitalist allies get to have a system that doesn't result in inability to pay health care costs being the number one cause of bankruptcy in our society. It doesn't make sense. The whole notion of insurance companies is mind-boggling to our foreign allies. But I think you're right. You know, Americans deserve as good coverage as their public servants who only work 170 days a year to get.
Exactly. And speaking of that, then another great way to hit these guys in the pan, since they're dealing mostly with people who are not making millions of dollars when they try to get their votes out, is, hey, it's if your congressman made $1 million during the recession, how did you do?
Exactly. Now, break that down. Tell me why you say that, because I think that's a great point.
Okay, I live in a district, you know, one of the gerrymandered districts around Chicago, where I've got Henry Hyde's successor,
mm.
you know, a guy named Peter Roskam, and that's literally how his name is pronounced, Roskam.
I don't get to make fun of guys' last names.
It's okay. Exactly. At any rate, he's a classic. You know, he spends all his time essentially in Washington waiting to get his orders on how he's supposed to vote,
mm-hmm.
The rest of the time caddying for John Boehner. And then when it's time to go, he's one of those guys that's at the top of the list. And look at all the money the guy made. He does nothing but vote no on everything, unless it has something to do with making money for rich guys.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time, he's just sitting there bringing the money in.
Bringing the money in from, like, his PAC, you mean? Like, from donations and from lobbyists?
Not only his PAC, but, you know, all these guys are doing insider trading. You
of course, yeah.
What's his name? Eric Cantor, whose wife is a Goldman Sachs VP. And the boys.
Ted Cruz.
At midnight.
Ted Cruz is not using the health care Congress gets. Ted Cruz is getting all of his health care from his wife's health care package because she works at Goldman Sachs.
There we go. And we've got, and he's, I think there's at least three of them that have wives, all Republicans, who have wives that are Goldman Sachs execs.
Yeah.
And they did manage to slip in at midnight on that insider trading supposed reform.
Yeah, but there's no connection, of course, right?
No.
Obviously no connection.
They're just covered by Goldman Sachs.
Come on,
and
guys, don't go paranoid, all conspiracy theory on me now, everybody. There's no connection here at all.
And they're fighting really hard.
Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
No connection.
Well, you know what? You can't talk about that because the Democrats are almost as up to their eyeballs in that corruption as Republicans.
Oops.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the problem.
But for an election, it's a great shot. It's a great billboard. Hey,
I completely agree.
Your guy made $1 million.
Jeff,
how did you do during the recession?
Thank you so much for the call. It's a great point. How are we doing on time? We're going to break. Okay, well, we have a couple of Republicans calling in. God bless. I'm so happy to hear it. We'll be taking their calls and yours when we come back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show, 1-800-STEPH12.
She's your human Prozac. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
They're selling postcards of the hanging.
This is the Rolling Stones, a song that just lost the Grammy for Rock Song of the Year with Doom and Gloom. I think it's the best single they've released in 25 years. They actually lost the Grammy to Paul McCartney and the surviving members of Nirvana for Cut Me Some Slack, which we're going to play later on in the show, because that's a great song, too. It's a good rock song.
Rock's coming out. I
nice
like
to
it.
Hear these old, it's nice when these guys that you admire are in their 70s and they're still making great stuff.
Inspiring. It gives you something to shoot for.
That's what it's all about. I actually think that Martin Scorsese movie about the Stones is like the greatest film ever about aging on your own terms and doing what you love. Shine a Light. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, 800-STEPH12. Really quick, I want to tell you, I've been so delighted to see the support that Free Speech TV has gotten. Look, if you care about getting your news from an independent source, if you want information that's not filtered through the corporate sieve, programs like the Tom Hartman program, programs like Ring of Fire, the Stephanie Miller Show, the Bill Press Show, and of course, for my money, the greatest journalist alive, Amy Goodman at Democracy Now!, then you owe it to yourself to support Free Speech TV. You're helping get this programming out. In many cases, in many red states, it's the only independent voice some people get. We're drowned out by Fox. Obviously, that's going to happen, but you can't stop the voices of truth from getting out there. Free Speech TV is radio-free America with cameras, and aside from the great and entertaining programming you get, which will make you the smartest kid at the water cooler, you're also, when you pledge, becoming part of something bigger. And when you call 877-378-8669, I'll repeat that number in a second, to make a donation and stand with your network, Free Speech TV, they can continue to bring you the kind of programming you won't see anywhere else. And for a $240 donation, that's $20 a month, they'll send you the Stephanie Miller Show coffee mug and the Stephanie Miller Show messenger bag and the Stephanie Miller Show baseball cap so you can show all your friends and coworkers what an insufferable America-hating liberal you really are. Seriously, it's great to be a part of something bigger, to be a part of a movement. And I would love to see Free Speech TV in every home in America just so people have the option and know what an independent voice looks like.
You know, if you say, oh, I watch all the news things, you know, say you cover it all, well, this would be one of the things you should add to that statement.
Yes, I'm John Fugelsang along with Rick Overton, and we encourage you to support Free Speech TV. That number again is 877-378-8669. I'm so glad we have a Republican brother calling up, Brandon from Ohio. Good morning, sir. You are welcome. We're happy to have you join us on the Stephanie Miller Show.
How's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
What a pleasure.
Okay. I have such a hard time. I'm like the most laid back person you ever meet.
Yeah.
I have a really hard time listening to your show.
Okay.
It makes me very angry.
Okay. I'm not here to make you angry. I'm here to make friends. What makes you angry?
I think the conservative message has been so wrapped up in this Republican, GOP, crony capitalism, all that type of stuff. And it's not. Conservative ideology has nothing to do with that. It's free markets. It's limited government.
But you'd agree the Republican Party has screwed up that message pretty badly, right?
Either party, particularly, no. And the problem with it is, and liberals believe, I think, government fixes problems. Conservatives believe government causes problems. I don't like crony capitalism. And the reason we have crony capitalism is because we have a large, powerful federal government where these large businesses can pay off certain people to make and write bills
that's certainly true.
Them.
So are you?
So far, we're one third to one half agreeing with everything you're saying of the gate.
Although I wouldn't agree with you when you say that liberals believe government fixes everything. That's not true. Liberals believe that we the people can use government to make the lives of our countrymen and women better.
And I would say that when you're complaining about a politician, you are shouting at the front desk receptionist for the corporation that put them in place. You're just making the person at the desk cry, but they can't. The force behind them, the place where the real money comes from, is the one that bought them and stationed them there like a guard outpost.
Why do they do that? They have to do that.
They have to do it. Or you think
power there?
So Brandon, but
you're really sticking to the actual kind of conservative rules that my grandma had.
Well,
she was an actual conservative.
Barry Goldwater was an actual conservative. We don't have a lot of them around. And Brandon, I like a lot of what you're laying down. You seem to me to be the kind of conservative who's kind of disgusted at what Alec does, writing this legislation that these guys just copy and paste, and it creates more crony capitalism. You seem like the kind of guy who's disgusted that $39 billion of our tax money went to Halliburton for a war of choice. Am I right?
Well, I mean, both sides voted for that, so
there were a lot of Dems that did.
There were a lot of Democrats that did.
The money trickled through, and it abridges everything. But the money that we're talking about isn't coming from other politicians. We both have to agree now that the money we're talking about is coming from a corporate source that wants the legislation to favor it, right? We both.
I mean, the aristocracy is always called the shots in democracy,
this is where we differ: is how to eliminate that problem. You're trying to attack the corporations and all that, and that's fine, whatever. But if you really want to eliminate the problem, let's take the power out of the government's hand. That's why they do that. It's because there's so much power in so few people's hands.
But what if you're doing
this with a few people can make a dramatic difference. Let's give the power back to the states.
I think this is where we differ, Brandon, because getting power back to the states is fine, and I'm sure we'd agree and disagree on many ways to do that, but you're not talking about getting big money out of government. You're talking about getting big government out of America. We're not supporting big government. We're supporting good government. Why don't we focus on getting the big money corrupting influence out of Congress? Why don't we make Congress a place where you can't go to get rich? One thing I really agree with Ted Cruz on, the most brilliant thing, the only brilliant thing he said in that ridiculous, farcical CPAC speech, but he said one line that didn't get applause, and I thought it was great, that congressmen should not be allowed to be lobbyists once they leave the office.
Congress should not be
a path to being a millionaire. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but you guys are seemingly taking the long about path. If you just eliminate the power that they have, there's no reason for these.
Give me an example,
to donate money.
I hear conservatives talking about states' rights, and then I don't see it when it comes to marriage equality or cannabis legalization. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's let's go to states' rights. They shouldn't have that much power. And why is the government involved in marriage to begin with? They shouldn't even have that power.
Well, no, but because government
debate about gay marriage.
Well, and Brandon, we got to go to break. I thank you for the call. I really appreciate having a pleasant and positive conservative like yourself. But again, the government gets involved in marriage equality because the people were denying equality to Americans. This is a free country, and government's there for us to use to help each other when it's necessary and when it's possible. That's good government.
The influences that
we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all week long, taking all y'all's calls at 1-800-STEPH-12, joined as always by the capable and punctual Tony Sorrentino on the board, and by the Emmy Award-winning super comic Rick Overton to my left. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, John.
Thank you, sir. We're taking your calls all day. We're helping out with the pledge drive for Free Speech TV, which carries this show. In case you enjoy Stephanie Miller's show on the radio or on your computer, you can also enjoy it on your TV as well. But right now, it is time to welcome one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite people to interview. This man is one of our greatest columnists in America. I don't mind saying it. He's also got a great new book out called Yeah, Yeah, Yeah about the Beatles, which for my money is one of the, I'd say, two or three best books about the Beatles I've ever read. I put it up there with Shout because it's the first book that really puts the Beatles in historical context and lets you know what America was like when they came, in case you weren't around then. He's also just was a guest on my show, Viewpoint, on Current all last year. Heck, y'all don't need me to set him up anymore. It's Michael Tomasky. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you very much. Nice to hear yours.
Nice things about me, especially.
Well, you know, hey, thanks for the check. And I'm very excited to talk to you because there's seems to be two competing strains of thought in the Democratic Party after what happened in Florida this week. On the one hand, you got folks pulling their hair out and saying Alex Sink's loss is a bellwether for how badly we're going to get crushed in November. On the other hand, you have a few voices who say, wait a minute, take a step back. This isn't as bad as it seems. And I wanted to get your take, sir. You've written a couple of good columns on it this week.
November still might be a disaster.
Yeah.
For a whole range of reasons. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not wearing rose-colored glasses with respect to that. But I don't think, I think a lot of people are reading a little bit too much into this Sink Jolly outcome. You know, people made a big deal of the fact that Obama won that district, but, you know, he barely won it, 2 points.
Yeah, Romney lost that district.
He's been a Republican for the last, you know, who knows how many years or centuries. And there wasn't much of a vote. You know, there were 50,000 fewer people voted than voted even in 2010. And 160,000 fewer people voted than voted in 2012.
13-point GOP advantage, according to the polling, too.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, Jolly's going to have to run again in November, and presumably about 50,000 more people will vote, and the candidate might be Sink again, or it might be some other Democrat, but presumably, you know, with a different electorate, you know, it might be a little bit different. But the main point that I am trying to make in the things I'm writing, John, is that it really can't be laid, this loss really can't be laid at Obamacare's table in the way that the conventional wisdom is doing it.
I'm glad you talked about that, because we keep hearing people saying that Democrats need to run away from Obamacare, and you're one of the voices in the wilderness saying, no, it's actually, it could be the opposite. Unpack that for us, Michael. Break it down.
Yeah, well, I wrote this morning, Jeff Guerin, Democratic pollster who did Sink's polling, has some numbers that he shared with me. So, you know, take that for what it's worth, listeners. You know, Democratic pollster talking to a liberal columnist.
Mm-hmm.
But his numbers, he did a lot of polling about, asked people a lot of questions about their feelings about Obamacare. And he says that it worked out at least a wash and maybe a slight positive for Sink, because he tested her message about Obamacare, or more exactly, he tested the criticisms Jolly was making of Sink about Sink's Obamacare position,
mm-hmm,
versus the criticisms that Sink was making of Jolly about Jolly's Obamacare position, and found that more people were put off, slightly more, but still more, were put off by Jolly's let's repeal this and go back to, you know, no coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, and insurers being able to throw people off their plans anytime they want to,
mm-hmm,
and so on and so forth. So he argues that, you know, she did do some fighting on the issue of Obamacare, and that she actually would have lost by a lot worse if she hadn't done that. And I think there's a lesson in there for Democrats who are, you know, running for the hills on this issue.
Now, in fairness, Michael, we do need to point out that there was a third candidate in this election, a libertarian conservative, who took 8% of the vote, and all things considered, Alex Sink would have taken a much harder hit had that not been the case.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right.
Yeah.
That probably doesn't change the outcome of Guerin's polling, which suggests that her position on Obamacare held its own.
So it seems like the solution for the Democratic Party for November, at least the beginning of getting people excited to come out and vote for them, because we know the GOP is not going to have a hard time getting their base excited. Democrats have to corral the rest of the society, and that's outside the bubble. It seems like the key to it is going to be finding some really attractive, well-spoken, telegenic people whose lives have been saved by the reforms of the Affordable Care Act and slapping them all over TV. Does that seem like the best way to take the taint off of the Affordable Care Act that's been placed on it by the taters?
Absolutely. I think it is. And I think, you know, some of the outside groups have done a pretty good job of that, but it hasn't found saturation point by any means. And, you know, it really needs to. Mm-hmm. By October for this message to get through to people.
And the medium being the message, too, is a huge thing. And I think a lot of times we use our opponent's phraseology for stuff. It's like using the expression entitlement for something that is not. Yeah. And to say it's a we start to take on their terminology a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not in our best interest to continue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beginning with the word Obamacare, which probably doesn't do very well in some of these districts.
Thank you. Romney Care. I have no problem calling it Obamacare as long as we call Social Security FDR care and Medicare LBJ care and get those points across.
Yeah. Right.
And because the opposite of Obamacare is pale indifference. They don't care. They don't care. And you know, Michael, one of the points I don't hear the Democrats saying, and I don't know why, is how can we replace this with a GOP plan when the ACA is a GOP plan? This mandate concept, which I don't like. I think single payer is what other capitalist nations do just fine. But this is a plan that was conceived by the Republican Heritage Foundation, implemented by the Republican Governor Romney and upheld by the Republican Supreme Court. Obama, you want to talk compromise? Liberals wanted single payer. Democrats wanted a public option. Obama went straight and made the GOP plan law. How is that not compromise enough, and why aren't Democrats making that point? Is it that it won't fit on a bumper sticker?
It's probably partly that, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I share your puzzlement over this, and it's a strange thing. But, you know, the Republicans, you know, they always have some kind of answer, right? So their answer to that is this incredible, you know, Obama, and I hear this a lot on Twitter and Facebook from Republican readers of mine, that Obama passed a totally partisan bill. Well, okay, that's an interesting form of logic. So you oppose it tooth and nail. You don't give it a single vote. Maybe it got that one vote from that guy in Louisiana.
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, you give it virtually no votes, and, you know, you oppose it tooth and nail, and you make it the death cage issue of our time. And then he tries to get your support, and he can't do it, and then you accuse him of doing a partisan bill.
And it's like, you know, I get that they're all in the pocket of the insurance companies, but this is a bill, this is a law that, you know, makes you buy private insurance plans. I mean, you know, Americans love buying inferior products. They voted for one in 2000 and 2004. I don't really not in 2000. Yeah. So I don't really understand how the Democrats are still playing defense when they can hammer the Republicans with the fact that what you want, and this is my big point, what the Republicans want is socialism, Michael. They want to go back to, if you're uninsured, you show up at an emergency room and the local taxpayers pick up the tab. Why aren't the Democrats calling them socialist? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, they're not creative enough to do that kind of thing.
Well, you wrote beautifully this week about, in your column, Healthcare's Resistors and Adapters, about how the GOP keeps throwing up these Obamacare horror stories, and then they have to be debunked, and Fox News doesn't cover the debunking. It's much like the Alan Grayson is a wife-beater thing. We hear this, it's splashed all over the media, and
now
then over the next
so
10 days,
debunked.
It's so debunked, his wife drops the...
She
dropped the
protective
order.
You
know, they released the 911 tapes. We know he didn't hit her. She said, I shot him.
Reversed.
Police are pressing charges. So we know the guy's been cleared and exonerated. Fox ain't covering that part, and it's the same with these Obamacare horror stories.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm sure there are people out there in the United States who've gotten a raw deal. There have to be, you know. Just
yes, there are. My brother, for one.
But yeah, there you go. But but somehow everybody they've put forward hasn't really fallen in that category.
That's pretty depressing, but not as depressing as the fact that we have a president, a so-called president, who has an agenda. a sinister agenda, and I'm going to call him out right now. This so-called president, this so-called Barack Obama, has a decidedly anti-American agenda to destroy, and I don't think I'm overstating things here, he wants to destroy Pat Boone.
Yeah, Pat Boone has is a member of the group the Friends of Abe.
What?
Which is the conservative conglomerate of entertainers in Hollywood, Gary Sinise's group.
Okay.
And he's now quite convinced the former singer and did some movies too, is now quite convinced that Barack Obama is out to get him and destroy his, you know, I guess, career.
And he said this, that Barack Obama's got a hit on him.
Yeah, was is out to get him. Yeah, yeah. And I just realized what a great career boost he's just given himself. So Barack Obama's out to get me, too.
You know, he thinks Barack Obama's out to destroy him, again confusing Obama with his own agent. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We're taking your calls. We're raising money for Free Speech TV. Do we have time for a call before the break? Let's go, because let me tell you, Robert has been calling. He's on hold from Ontario, and it's always a pleasure to welcome a caller from the great state of Canada. Hello, Robert. You're on the Stephanie Show.
I wish it was Canada, but we don't have any socialized.
Oh, you're here. Ontario, California.
Yeah.
Oh, I spent a month there one weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's a nice place to get stabbed. Anyway, lovely airport.
Listen, I want to talk. I know it's not going to make me a very popular person, but I think what's going to help progressives succeed is the campaign on campaign finance reform.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule in favor of McCutcheon in the case of McCutcheon versus FEC, even though a constitutional amendment is inching its way through the state houses. I don't see Congress passing it because they're already bought off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the bad news. But the good news is, you know, a candidate like Marianne Williamson, who's
yes.
running for Henry Waxman's old seat in Los Angeles, she's sworn off PAC money and lobbyist money, and that's very encouraging. And I'd like to see other candidates do that. And
Alan Grayson
should be encouraging.
Yep, I get to vote for. I'm still a California voter, so I get to vote for Marianne Williamson. I don't know if you happen to hear, but she joined us in studio for a full hour this last Tuesday.
Oh wow,
yeah, she's great.
So
I'm in her.
You know, I'm very encouraged by this development. But I think, you know, I'd really like to see her take the fight to Ted Lieu and to mm-hmm. Wendy Gruel and say, listen, I'm swearing off PAC money. I'm swearing off lobbyists. You know, I challenge you to do the same. You know, I think that would really push the conversation further. Second step, I'd like to see her challenge voters. Voters aren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, candidates have to spend gobs and gobs of money.
Robert, we got to go to break. I completely agree with everything you said, and I thank you for the call. You can go to Marianne for Congress and help out Marianne Williamson. It's a runoff election. You're not hurting Democrats. Check her out. We'll be right back with your calls on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
You know, every time, we got Tina Dupuy coming up in a second. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in along with Rick Overton and Tony Sorrentino on the boards. And every time I come out to L.A., I get mad because Dave Rubin is a terrific comic who used to do a terrific show on Sirius XM in New York, and then he got all uppity. Like Barack Obama,
yeah.
Got all uppity. I love these people who defend Putin and Cheney and call the black guy arrogant, but this guy is arrogant. He had a perfectly good gig at Sirius XM in New York. I had a friend who wasn't a complete malcontent nitwit, and then he moves out here to join the Young Turks Borg Empire, and now you're enjoying your own show. Dave Rubin, welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, it's good to be here, and yes, it is true. Sirius did offer me another year at more money, and I did leave it to go do a YouTube talk show.
That
which
sounds
really,
like the sort of thing I do.
That's we've made some odd career choices, but here we are.
Yeah.
And I like walking into a place the second before you go on air.
Well,
it's got a good energy.
That's the LA traffic makes that a thing you can experience every day.
Yeah.
I'm glad Dave Rubin is with us for the full hour. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're taking a couple good calls. We have Dino Badala at the half past the hour. I now have two of my favorite comedians here, and it would only be better if only Tina Dupuy, whose jingle we can't find, was around. Tina, welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning.
I like that introduction better.
Thanks.
Tina Dupuy, whose jingle we can't find.
Well, you're on with Rick Overton and Dave Rubin.
Hi, Tina.
It's a pleasure to have you, Tina.
Oh, Rick Overton. Mm. Hello, Rick Overton.
Hey, Tina.
You were such a dreamboat, Rick Overton.
Oh, sweetheart, coming from you. Boy, that's I'm going to tie a balloon around it and let it float around. Thank you.
I think I just got pregnant listening to this conversation. All right, Tina, as you may or may not know, tonight Rick Overton and I are doing a show in Santa Monica with Comedy Nation about the progressive agenda, and all day long we've been asking our callers and our guests like Mike Tomasky and now you what it is the Democratic Party needs to do, A, to reach out to our conservative friends and pull them out of the matrix, B, to win in November and not get shellacked, and C, to effectively govern once they've won in the face of all this obstruction. I mean, it's hard out there for a lib, and I wanted to know your take on it, especially in light of what happened in Florida this week.
Well, I think the Florida, this, it was not a bellwether. I mean, come on, a Republican won a Republican seat, and now everyone on Fox News, I made my debut last night on Hannity. It's not going to air for another week.
Congratulations.
But everyone there was crowing about this special election, and it was a Republican who won a seat that was held by Republicans. I don't know how this is a thing. Really, what needs to happen in November is turnout. If we don't have Democrats who show up at the polls to vote for Democratic candidates, we will not win back the House.
Couldn't agree more. And how are they going to do it?
And that leads to obstructionism, and that leads to everything else. I mean, Obamacare is not a perfect law, nor has any law that has ever been passed ever been perfect, especially something that is as personal and complicated as healthcare. But it needs to be improved. There needs to be changes made. There will never be anything that will change in this in the Boehner Congress, except for repeal. They don't have a replace. They just want to repeal it. Most Americans do not want to see people get kicked off their health care because they get sick. No one wants to go back to the system that it was. It was horrible, demeaning, dehumanizing before. Mm-hmm. An absolutely awful system that was run by insurance companies.
As opposed
now
to now.
Now it's a little less awful run by insurance companies. And, you know, there have been vast improvements. My in-laws had their house saved by Obamacare. They were paying $24,000 a year because they were uninsurable. And they had already lost their job, so their retirement savings were going into just paying for medical coverage.
Oh, my God.
And because of Obamacare, they now fall into the Medicaid expansion in California. They're going to keep their home.
Why aren't your in-laws in commercials for the Democratic Party? Why are they just taking the hit?
I landed this on Hannity last night.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you something. That Hannity
interview,
Tina, that Hannity interview with you is going to have more cuts than the cast of Girl Interrupted. They're going to chop that thing up.
I know we're on the radio, but, you know, for all of those listening, I look like a Republican. I'm the blondest person on the panel. No joke, I looked in the monitor. There was 20 people on the panel. I looked in the monitor. I could not figure out which blonde I was.
No, you are so blonde, Roger Ailes has to have aides hold his hands back from offering you a contract on Fox News.
I think I stunned Hannity talking about single payer. It was really funny.
Wow, the words single and payer were said on Fox News. I once said the word sexy. I once tricked a Fox News host in the mornings on the weekend into saying the word sexy liberal comedy tour in that order, and that was my crowning achievement in life. And Dave, feel free to jump in on this anytime, because what I want to know is, it's easy to make fun of the Republicans, and God knows CPAC
yes, it
made
is.
It a riot.
Thank
Democrats
you.
Have no CPAC. Democrats have no pep rally. Netroots Nation is like the community college compared to their Ivy League in terms of funding. So my question is, we can mock CPAC, but these guys are organized. These guys are getting the base ready to go out, and you don't need to have the majority when you have a focused, tiny bubble minority.
why don't Democrats have a CPAC? Is it because we're all off having gay sex and drugs and doing that kind of thing, and it's hard to organize a convention?
Be fair, we're child pornographers, too. I mean, Tina, you go to Netroots Nation.
Wait a second. I thought we were cannibals. Weren't we eating babies? What?
That's seasonal. The other is it's year-round.
Guys, you've got to keep it straight.
Okay. Tell me something. What do you think? You've been to Netroots Nation. Do you think that there could ever be any kind of progressive action conference that might get some corporate funding and get some coverage by the media? Or is it just going to be more of this endless GOP is organized and the Democrats are trying to corral the rest of America?
Mm. I think that the Republicans are not as organized as we would like to think that they are. I think that they have been fighting amongst themselves. They're in the middle of a civil war. This is not George Bush's Republican Party. I think that they are on message, on one cable news network, and then the rest of the time they're kind of, they have been engaging in cannibalism. They have been eating their own, and they've been primarying each other, and there's still that kind of, insurrection that's happening in the Republican Party. Democrats are actually quite organized. I mean, if anybody's ever been involved and it's usually when Barack Obama is on the ballot, where there's people getting Democrats to the polls and organizing and reaching out to voters who would otherwise be disenfranchised. I mean, there really is an infrastructure that was built around Barack Obama. The problem is he's not going to be on the ballot in November, and he's also not going to be in the ballot in 2016. So
could Hillary Clinton, would it be smart, do you think, of Mrs. Clinton to get out there and be the face of the Democratic Party in 2014, owing to her popularity, owing to it could be a teaser campaign for what is sure to be an historic presidential run? Do you think that Mrs. Clinton could wind up being the savior, or is she going to wait until this is over and then launch herself? Because you're the oracle, you should know this.
Yeah, right. I'm the oracle. I don't know. You're asking the person who said that Tim Pawlenty was going to be the nominee, right? he's the first one to drop out. His name was the easiest to make a pun with, plenty of votes.
Oh, yeah.
He did do that first debate in his defense. He did do one debate.
So you really don't want to ask.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's fair enough. I mean, but I agree with you. You know, you need to have a charismatic figure to get people turning out at the polls, and Barack Obama did that. And I'm not just talking for African Americans. He got young people to show up. He got poor people to show up. He got seniors to show up who wanted to see it in their lifetime. I think Mrs. Clinton, who is arguably now the most popular politician in America, and the presidency is hers if she wants it, because, hey, we had a war with England to get away from inherited power. We're done with that now. Ron Paul's son versus Bill Clinton's wife will be a terrific election.
Malia 2032. That's my prediction right now.
Why are people saying that about these poor children? Why would you do that to the Obama children?
You have to maintain the legacy.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Michelle Obama run for office, to tell you the truth. I'd be delighted by
patience.
That.
You know, can I just say that, John, when I was at the DNC this last year, when we listened to Michelle Obama speak, everybody kind of looked at themselves and they're like, and why are we voting for this dude, for this woman's husband? Why do we have to vote for him? Because she is stunning.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, can I just be base?
It was like the Republicans looking at Chris Christie.
Can I be base for a second and say,
why are we voting for the other person?
Michelle Obama, and this is horrible, and I expect to get all the feminist step heads mad at me. The first hot first lady in history.
See, I knew that.
I mean, Dolly Madison, not taking anything away from her. But Jackie Kennedy, very beautiful. I wouldn't call her hot. Yeah. Lady Bird had her moments.
Barbara Bush, nothing.
At the right angle when the light brought out the blue in her hair, and you could imagine things you could do with them pearls, maybe. But yeah. No, I think I would say Michelle Obama is the first hot first lady.
You really should get letters, John.
I'm writing a letter right now.
Look, I'm allowed to be a base heterosexual with a Y chromosome once in a while, and I gotta say, and I think that she is in many ways the administration's secret weapon. And on another note, you don't really understand how racist our country is until you hear the things people say about the president's wife. The stuff they say about the president is nothing compared to the stuff Michelle Obama's had to have thrown at her.
John, she does want kids to eat vegetables, and if there's anything more offensive than
so
that,
awful.
I don't know what it
how
is.
Dare she?
Yeah,
how dare.
That's right. Big government, my kid's diabetic bloodstream.
She's trying to put broccoli in it.
Baroccoli.
Oh,
I see. It all fits together. It's Baroccoli.
That's how they indoctrinate the kids, like the gays do.
Yeah.
Well, so, Tina, what's it going to take? We know Democrats have to get better turnout. Is it better messaging? Do Democrats need a good Frank Luntz who can come up with better sound bites for them? I mean, they got to clobber these guys. They got to take the fight to them. And I keep seeing them be this human pinata, this S&M slave who forgot their safe word and just was getting punched.
That's so true.
Yeah, this is going to be, we have a Congress that has a rating on par with toe fungus. So we're going to, this is in November, we're going to be essentially voting for our Congress. Like, everybody is going to have their congressman on the ballot.
Right.
And your congressman, of course, everyone likes their congressman, theoretically, but hates Congress as a whole. You're going to ask people to turn out in mass for a person who they really think is a schmuck, at the end of the day, who hasn't been able to get anything done. I mean, this is the laziest Congress. This is do nothing would actually be doing something.
Exactly.
To borrow from a Seinfeld bit, these people, are really completely ineffective as lawmakers. And if you like that, you want to go out and actually vote for that. And if you like a Congress just kind of doing nothing and taking a government paycheck, you are a Republican.
Tina, how can people?
It's going to be a rough road ahead.
How can people follow you and your work, Tina?
You can go to TinaDupuy.com. That's the
DUPUY.
Instead, even weird, DUPUY.com. And you also could follow me on Twitter.
And I'm retweeting your Twitter right now because
retweeting my Twitter.
Fly writes, Tina Dupuy is smart and challenges conventional wisdom, breaks the stereotype that blondes have. It's really true. It is too bad about your looks. Tina, thank you so much for calling in as always.
Bye,
Tina.
Okay, we'll be getting to some of you callers who've been on hold for a while. Dave, can you stick around till the end of the hour?
I am here till the end of the hour.
Rick, can you stay sober till we're done?
Drinking coffee.
Tony, you're awake? Okay. We'll be right back. 1-800-STEP-12. This is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God! That's like my favorite show ever!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. You're listening to Vampire Weekend from their new album, Modern Vampires of the City. I'm going to say this now. I think this was my favorite record of 2013. This was like the one album once I started playing it, could not stop. I was crazy about their second record. This one, Modern Vampires of the City by Vampire Weekend. So melodic, so creative. Really a delightful, like, if you're a fan
it's
of Pet Sounds.
And also like a more rockish Paul Simon.
I mean, if you like 70s Paul Simon, if you like Sgt. Pepper, like this is so melodic and the orchestrations are great. So check it out. I wouldn't lie to you. Really, I wouldn't.
No, you got great taste in music. A lot of my library is based on your advice.
Rick Overton is here. The great Dave Rubin is here. Dave, tell me about your show on the Young Turks Network.
Oh, my God. Well, it is on YouTube, which is the future. That's what the kids say. Television. Who's watching television? It's on YouTube. YouTube.com/RubinReport. R-U-B-I-N. They make me spell it every time, but not like the sandwich.
People saying knows how that feels.
Yeah, you know how that is. And we do, I bring on two comics usually every week, and we do all the current events. It's sort of like Hot Topics on The View, but less about Whoopi's private party.
You've had Rick, and I know you're having Trayvon Free is coming on
Trayvon
this week.
I've had Melissa Rauch from Big Bang Theory.
Nice.
Jackie Harry has been on there.
Everyone needs to follow Dave. Dave was making fun of my hair a second ago on Twitter.
I'm giving your hair props.
I don't understand, man. I try to be smart. I try to be funny. I try to be tall. They mock my hair. And Tony here is what did you say in the break?
I say we should just go bald like me or something.
But see, if I went bald like you, I would look like a camp survivor. That's the problem. I'm pale. I'm skinny. I look like Liberation of Dachau calendar, okay? You know, and we're in the golden age of white guys who can be bald and look cool. For so long, only the brothers.
It's so easy for you to say that.
Only the brothers could be. For my whole life, only black guys could be cool with shaved heads. And I will give Bruce Willis credit for two things. Bruce Willis is the only actor who starred in two great time travel films.
Yeah, 12 Monkeys.
Looper and 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
And Bruce Willis made it cool for white guys to shave their heads.
I love the guy with the beautiful long locks. You could be in a hair shampoo commercial praising the bald people.
I couldn't be in a hair shampoo. I could be beaten up. Oscar Wilde would beat me up with this hair.
You could be in an Axe commercial.
Oh, that's me.
When the chicks at the beach.
An Axe commercial. Let me tell you something.
As the older guy.
Spray on deodorant is it for axholes, okay? we thank you very much for joining us.
What are we doing politics?
We're disintegrating. We're just going to disintegrate before this is done. We're just going to dissolve into giggles.
It's a brawl.
I do want to take a moment. We have to go to break in a second. When's break? Because Dean's calling in. What are you doing? Why don't you? Tony's counting.
So we got like 2.5 minutes.
Oh well, hey, I've had prom night sexual experiences that lasted longer than that. Dean Obadala will be joining us in just a moment, and we are going to get to all your calls. There are people who've been on the phone for a long time, and Jane in Jersey, we have a minute for you. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, John.
Hi.
My subject changed because I was on the phone.
Okay.
But it made the crack about New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. About New Jersey politics and their governors. About Jersey.
Hey, I'm from Englewood.
I got family there.
I'm from New Jersey.
Oh, well, it's just, and on top of that, I have it going against me because I was born in Florida, so I have everything against me.
Wow, so there's someone with a Florida accent in Jersey. That's the opposite world.
Yeah, and if I go to Florida, they say I have a Jersey accent. So
okay,
whatever.
Well, Jane, we're almost at break time. What do you want to say?
Real fast, everybody has to stop calling it Obamacare.
Yes.
Say the ACA, the ACA, the ACA, and Democrats or progressives, whatever, have to start punching in that this is the Republicans' plan.
Yes.
Go point by point by point and show that it was their plan to begin with.
Jane from Jersey wins. Thank you for that logic bomb you dropped on us.
Go Jersey.
It's a beautiful thing. I mean, and she's right. I say all along, if you're going to call it Obamacare, then you call Social Security, FDR care, Medicare, LBJ care, and tax cuts for rich guys who don't need tax cuts, W care.
Yeah, and can someone tell Matt Drudge, please, that every day his lead story is somebody gets turned away because of Obamacare. They were turned away before Obamacare. It needs to understand that little detail.
Anything more precious than seeing a Republican outraged over people being dropped from their insurance plan? It's like Republicans being outraged about deficits for the first time in their life.
Yeah.
You know?
Or human life in Benghazi.
Uh-huh. Or now with Russia invading there. Wow. They're really upset about a big superpower invading a smaller country that never attacked them for the first time in their life.
I'm offended. Of course.
It's crazy. Oh, man. Well, we're going to be taking your calls when we come back. We're getting to everybody who's on hold, my hand to God, but Dean Obadala of the Daily Beast and one of my favorite comics in New York joins us next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Enemy man. Now remember that line you was kicking to me on the way out to L.A. Lounge in Queens while we was in the car on the way to the shop. Well, yo, right now,
the actual song doesn't start for another 10 seconds. You can keep it. You know who this is, Rick? You know who this is? Paul McCartney and the members of Nirvana. No.
What?
This is Public Enemy.
The Public Enemy,
Chuck
yeah.
D, play a little of this. This is a great song. Harder Than You Think by Public Enemy in 2012. Great song. We should turn it off before he says a bad word.
Good lyrics. Yeah.
Chuck D, man, he was a great radio host on Air America. You know, he knows his stuff. I still say he's the greatest rapper alive. And I say that as a skinny pale white guy. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. Dave Rubin is with us.
Yes, sir.
Rick Overton is with us.
Hey, John.
I'm getting all my favorite comedians in one room together. It would only be better if I had our old pal, Dean Obadala, on the phone.
Oh, my God.
Hi, Dean.
Hey, how are you guys?
Welcome to the show, Dean Obadala, the Sexy Beast.
A team sort of comedy. This is really good. Maybe the right up. This is amazing.
We're the A minus team.
No, you guys are really. For politics, I'd say A team.
This is a very.
Jokes.
It's a very, very strong lineup, and we are so uncomfortable with how powerful we are politically that we're just talking about classic rock and making sex jokes all day.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to be a part of it now.
Dean, I was just telling John about the years, literally the years that we spent, me and you, on a corner in Times Square. Barking, handing out comedy show tickets like comedy prostitutes. When you think back to that, doesn't it feel slimy?
Comedy prostitutes, that's a bit redundant, comedy prostitutes.
What was your corner? What was your street corner?
Oh, God, I was on, well, when Dean and I were doing it together, I was on 45th and Broadway.
For the Hawk?
Right.
We were at Gladys's Comedy Club.
Oh, Gladys's.
Oh, you're competing with
we Hawk. Were competing. We were before
when Gladys was at Hamburger Harry's?
Yeah.
The second time I ever did stand-up.
Oh, God.
Ever. Was at Gladys's comedy room when she was on the east side, and the MC was Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah,
that was a long time
she
ago.
Always said she found Jim Gaffigan. That's what
did she?
She did find Jim Gaffigan.
Dean, you remember those days? Wasn't it a freaking nightmare?
It was no fun, and it's.
Dean,
I have to go hand out flyers in a few hours.
Dean, I'm glad you took a break from constantly constantly writing excellent articles. You have like 9 a week.
Sometimes 4. But can I just give you some breaking news? They still have not found the Malaysian plane. I just want to break that to you guys because it's nonstop breaking news. Going, they're just interviewing people who have flown on planes at this point. Like, well, been on a plane. Well, did you ever think your plane would disappear? No. Oh, well, back to you. Breaking news.
I know. And Liam Neeson has a plane hijacking movie coming out, so that just feeds them even more B-roll footage.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, we've got some people now who've actually seen an advanced screening of Nonstop to talk about the Malaysian plane. Did anything you see in that film possibly remind you of what could have happened with Malaysia?
Wait till Captain Phillips, the plane version, comes out. How long till Fox blames Somali pirates for taking the plane?
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah.
I got to say,
brown Muslim guys are going to blame at some point.
Tom Hartman's show yesterday said that there was a worker on an oil rig who said he saw the plane go down, but we don't know. It could be in the jungle. Now they're saying it could have been hijacked. My favorite are the adults who are convinced that it's aliens. Because they believe
aliens?
What they want to believe. Oh, yeah, aliens abducted the plane. That's how they're going to come say hi to us.
I think an X-Men, a mutant was on it and changed it to something.
You know,
I mean, it's just...
I'm uncomfortable joking about it because it looks like it's a tremendous tragic loss of life, but
I think we can joke about the media coverage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Media coverage is insane. They just rephrase the question. So, you don't know where the plane is. Breaking news! He still doesn't know where the plane is.
Yeah.
This is what's going on. You watch it, but people are apparently... I've seen the ratings for some of the cable networks. CNN's doing great. It's really been a boon for them. I mean, they've got to hope the plane doesn't get found for a while.
In fairness, it's not all that often in our lifetimes that an airliner full of people has just vanished. I mean, can't remember this happening. And
well,
many think that...
We consider planes so big, right? But when you're over the ocean, you realize we're nothing.
If it's hijacked, it could be anywhere. And again, if the pilot had to attempt to... And the fact that they were pinging satellites makes it really fascinating.
Well, the engines were still sending data, which they don't do underwater. And the phones were still ringing, which they don't do underwater.
Yeah.
So those are two huge mitigating factors.
But again, if it landed on the water successfully, that would explain how it could have sunk without any debris. Dean?
I blame Obama.
And well, you should. But that's because you're a bad Muslim blaming one of your own.
You know, speaking of CNN's ratings, you have to admit, though, they are getting a little bump just because they got rid of Piers. So it's like there's a good feeling around them.
Apparently,
right now. People are just tuning in to see.
Apparently, having people come on to berate Piers on his own show is helping ratings.
Yes.
Give the viewers what they want.
He also had the guy who found the Titanic on. I'm not kidding. To discuss the plane crash.
To talk about the plane?
Yeah.
Robert Ballard was on?
Yeah.
Did Robert Ballard tell him he sucked as an interviewer like Chelsea?
He didn't do the full Chelsea Handler like you're just awful thing. But I mean, that's how stupid cable news really is.
I know.
Like,
hey,
this guy found the Titanic, so he probably knows where this
look,
plane
what's
is.
What's Piers Morgan going to do? Hack our emails? Come on. Well, Dean, you wrote some great pieces this week, and I want to get to one of them because I have a couple of my favorite comedians here, and you wrote about, and Frank Conniff is quoted in your piece.
Frank Conniff, the TV's Frank.
Yeah, he was on the show the other day about why liberals are generally better at comedy than our conservative brothers and sisters.
Well, that was the point of the article is really why does the right fear comedy? And my thesis was twofold. One was that they're not good at comedy, and second, they understand how powerful comedy can be.
Yeah.
And so that's why they freak out. Like when President Obama went on Between Two Ferns, you know, they freaked out and and the comments unbelievable, not just from Fox News, from a Republican congressman, from so many media outlets on the right calling it dreadful, horrific, tragedy, you know, gross. It's because they understand how it reaches people. And I was trying to be objective, man. I reached out to even conservative comedians saying, why are there so few of you? And one responded, but he didn't want his name known, and he's a nice guy and didn't want to make it difficult for him at all. But I just don't think conservatives are drawn to comedy or to the arts in general. I think from a completely serious point of view, just it's unstructured.
We all have friends, though, who are terrific conservative comics, who are great guys and who are conservative. But I think there's some truth to what you're saying. Rick, do you have any thoughts on?
Well, I think it's hard to sell stuff like the half-hour comedy hour because
Fox's
the reason
Fox's
response
show.
To The Daily Show, mm-hmm. because the jokes have to ring true to work. You can't bring a falsehood out and just do it snarky and hope that the snark covers up for the fact that there's no content
the jokes were so
that you
bad
can verify. Yeah.
And the new Barack Obama magazine is called B.O. Ha, ha, ha. I mean,
right.
That was literally a joke
they
told
it shows that,
that
in their head, mean equates funny or, and they don't understand. They think that the other responses to them are just being mean because they don't realize, no, no, we're telling the truth.
Yeah.
And the laugh comes out of the core of the audience knowing it's
yeah.
true.
Dave
Rubin? And of course, you have to punch up in comedy. That's the point of comedy. You are supposed to take down those in power.
Exactly.
So if you're siding with the corporations,
you don't
attack
down.
You're punching the wrong
way. You don't attack down. And it's like, I'm sorry, but the progressives have always been the ones on the side of the underdog. Art and comedy is all about the underdog. All great narratives are about the underdog. And it's why if you go to a comedy club and you see a comedian attacking down, I'm talking about a comedian who's making fun of homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm talking about a comedian who's making fun of, excuse the word I despise it, but comedians who talk about retards. You'll still see this filth in comedy clubs, right? And if you're drunk enough in the audience, you'll laugh for 3 or 4 minutes,
yeah.
and then you feel dirty, because attacking down doesn't work.
There's also a certain smugness attached to it. If you were to think of the three that pop into my mind would be like Dennis Miller, Carolla, and Greg Gutfeld, and they're all
okay.
Fox News guys.
Greg's not a comic. I mean, Greg's not really. No, he worked for Maxim. He comes from print. And Adam,
okay.
Adam is a stand-up, but he's really more of an entertainer, but I'll take that.
Okay, so whatever their original training
And I like
was,
all of those guys, by the way.
No, and I'm sure
I work with all those guys.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're all
and
great
Dennis
personally.
Was a splendid lion back in the night. When we were writing for him, he was this roaring.
Rick won an Emmy writing for Dennis Miller on his excellent HBO show.
Back in the 90s, no one could touch him. He formatted it for a lot of other people to follow in the footsteps of what he did.
Yeah, so he sort of changed after 9/11.
After 9/11, that's right.
Yeah, and there's just something about these guys that are on Fox News all the time. They're always attacking the wrong way. I'm sure the three of them are perfectly great guys. You know
well, you
mean?
Know, you got to get financially struggling social conservatives to be really angry about the capital gains tax. and so, Dean, I love that you wrote about this. I mean, so consistently, you know, you nail it in your columns. But you also talked about this Obama appearance on Zach Galifianakis and how effective it was at getting young people to sign up for health care. When I first saw it, I thought that's a bit in a bubble, but by the end of the day, it had been shared gazillions of times on Facebook and everyone saw it.
Right. Mm-hmm. It drove, there was an uptake of like 40% of traffic to healthcare.gov, confirmed by the Obama administration, from that video. It was definitely feeding traffic. Will people sign up? We're going to find out in the short term. But let's be honest, that's such an effective way of reaching out to people. It's through something comedic. A lot of these young people, a lot of adults, doesn't matter what your age, are not going to watch a speech on Obamacare, but they're going to watch a video that's funny and share it with their friends, going, you got to watch this really funny thing. And so, you know, maybe they don't listen as much on the Obamacare thing, but it does raise awareness. And, you know, if you follow the whole thing with Obamacare, they need about 40% of people between 18 and 34 to sign up. You know, to make sure the rates stay lower for the rest of the people,
mm-hmm.
because these younger people are supposed to be young invincibles and healthy and all that.
And for the numbers to look good to look good to run on in 2014.
Yeah, right.
2014 could be awful for Democrats. It really could. If the Democrats do not at least deal with the real issue of Obamacare, Alex Sink, who lost the Florida congressional race this week, had really good ads about it's not perfect, we're going to fix it. You know, and the Republicans are like, oh, we beat her, you know. She lost by like a point and a half in a district where the Republican had won 2 years before at 12%.
Yeah, but keep in mind there was a Libertarian candidate who took 8% of the vote. She really would have lost by 10 points if that guy hadn't been there because the GOP had a 13-point turnout advantage. Dean, can I take a call from someone for you guys? Because you're all here. James in Denver.
It would be great because we don't talk enough.
What? Oh, tell me where to push.
So push Dean's button one more time?
I push Dean's button, then I push this button.
No, yeah, as long as it's not bleaking, you're fine.
Okay, so...
No, hold on.
Okay, I'm sorry, Dean, I'm very slow here. Tony's going to help me, because James in Denver's been on hold for a long time, and I've only been here for a week. I haven't learned how to phones work yet.
That's
and
a
evidently,
lot
Tony hasn't either. James in Denver, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for waiting on hold. Yes, you're on with Rick Overton, Dean Obadalla, and Dave Rubin. Hit us.
Well, I got an idea. You know how when Barack Obama was first president and the Republicans put that clock on TV to show the debt going up and up for George W. Bush?
The debt they didn't show 2000 through 2008, yes.
Yeah. Yes. What if the Democrats do the same thing to them? Say to the Republicans, I want y'all to tell the American people what laws have y'all passed in the last 50 years to help the working poor in the middle class.
That's great.
Until then, I will let this clock run.
Well, I wouldn't.
Time to debate comes,
you don't want the Democrats pointing to the national debt clock. They'll get clobbered with it. But I do think you make a really valid point. Actually, the best point I've heard all day, and I thank you. Of saying what, and Dean, maybe you can answer this, what have the Republicans done to help working Americans in the last 50 years, besides 50 votes to repeal Obamacare?
What they've done, they've been trying to decimate the safety net so that people, the social Darwinism can take hold on everyone, the poverty's going to disappear.
Seriously, earned income tax credit, the earned income tax credit by Nixon, that's all I can think of.
Well, I mean, if you look, I can't think of anything they've done. I mean, the biggest thing, and Paul Ryan had a huge report that came out of his committee this week, and I actually read a lot of it because I had nothing to do yesterday. I'm not kidding. It's like 400 pages, and I read like 80 of it.
Dean, you got to get out more. I can recommend a corner in Times Square for you.
I read like a bunch of articles this week, and I'm like, I'm taking yesterday off to learn. That was my day to learn, so I was reading a lot of stuff to get ideas to write more articles. Is what I do. But in it, you know, the biggest pat on the back he gives to anyone on real welfare reform was Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. And even some liberals weren't happy with the way Bill Clinton did it and made more means testing. But the way they changed, they changed things for the better in that it was less disincentives to work. And, you know, that's part, you have to give people an incentive to get off welfare and work. And some programs, if you believe his report, still give you a disincentive to work a little harder because then you're going to lose benefits and the net is nothing.
Dean, how can people follow you? We got to run the break. How can people follow you?
At Dean of Comedy, at DEAN of Comedy, and, you know,
and
please follow
me.
I'm so needy.
And go see the man live. He's a great comic. Thank you, Dean Obadalla. You are brilliant as always. And we will be right back with Dave and Rick and as many of your calls as we can cram in for the final block of my final week hosting the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back. You're playing me out with LCD Sound System. I love you so much. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. This is my favorite LCD Sound System song. I thank you so much for joining us this week. Really quick, before we get our final thoughts from Dave Rubin and Rick Overton, folks who've been online, I'm going to pull an Alan Colmes. I'm going to give all y'all 10 seconds, and then I got to cut you off, okay? Bill in Michigan, you've been on the longest. Thank you so much. Sorry for the abbreviated time. Give us your point in 10 seconds.
Yeah, I was glad to hear Dean Obadalla talk about social Darwinism because I think that's been a central ideology of the Republican Party since Ronald Reagan, basically.
Exactly.
And I think we need to get that out there.
Yeah, that's the only kind of evolution they believe in. Thank you so much for the
call. Except for the fact that the intellect is a weapon.
Jeff at Pittsburgh, you got 10 seconds.
Good morning.
Hi.
Okay, real quick. Examine the poll books after the election. Find out who didn't vote. Use that to focus the vote,
mm-hmm.
and also use it to survey them and find out why they didn't vote.
Brilliant. You got the smartest kid in class, because we've got to figure out what this pathology is or why people aren't turning out. I'm sorry for the brevity of the call. Steve in Illinois, you're on the show. 10 seconds.
Whenever I hear somebody using terminology like big government socialism and let the free market work, I think this person has been infected by the Ayn Rand thought virus. They actually believe that individualism is the beginning and ending of all ethical political value, and it needs to be pointed out to them that they are operating from a false dichotomy.
The cells in a body that go from we to me is the definition of cancer.
And Ayn rhymes with mine. Steve, say hi to me on Twitter so I can promote you and get you more followers because you're a smart, articulate cat. And finally, Mike in West Virginia, the last caller of the week. What's up? 10 seconds.
John Fugelsang, Rick Overton should be paid to be our Frank Lutz on the left.
Right on.
Thank you.
Really wealthy liberals, take your money and get these guys sequestered so they can write stuff for our candidates.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to know all that coal dust hasn't affected your brain.
Rockin', Mike.
Dave?
Let me just say, as far as Frank Lutz, never trust a pollster with a bad toupee. Isn't that just like 101?
Oh, jeez.
That is one of the worst rugs I've ever seen. He's polling people on their opinions, and he's wearing a freaking horrible
toupee. Lie starts on the top of his head.
Top-down dishonesty. Thank you. That's brilliant. I gotta say, before we go, if you've enjoyed the programming this week in spite of me, please become a part of Free Speech TV. This is your last chance to do it. I'm not gonna ask you again. You can call 877-378-8669. If you love Stephanie Miller, Tom Harbin, Amy Goodman,
Bill Press, Ring of Fire, the things that make you the smartest, most moral, and sexiest person at the water cooler, please go to freespeech.org or call 877-378-8669. Get the voices out there. Get this information on the airwaves and be a part of it. Please do. For $20 a month, that's $240 a year, you can get all this great Stephanie Miller swag. Check it out. And if anyone wants to give a $1,000 donation, I'll make sure that Stephanie says your name on the air and gives you a lovingly alcoholic around the world when she gets back. Thank you. I also want to thank a few people who've made my week special, because Dave, it's not often they let me in here. Stephanie let the chimp throw the dart this time, and it landed on my headshot. But I want to thank all the guests I've had: Carl Frisch, Michael Tomasky, Frank Conniff. I want to thank Rick Overton, Susie Meister from MTV, Jackie Schechner, Tina Dupuy, Marianne Williamson. We had her in here for an hour. What a thrill. I am so endorsing her and supporting her candidacy for Congress. I want to get more independents who aren't Wall Street shills. Greg Proops was on the show this week. We did really well. Carlos Alas Rocky, and of course, the wonderful Dave Rubin.
Can I get a growl with that?
I also have to thank, of course, Ron Hartenbaum and Stephanie Miller, and here, closer to home, Tony Sorrentino. I love working with you. It's been years.
Thanks.
Natan Pachman of Free Speech TV. You can't see him on camera, but he's the glue holding this little ship together. And finally, the beautiful and brilliant Vanessa Heron, who has taken your calls and produced the damn thing. Dave, how can people follow you in your work?
Well, first off, when we leave here, we all go smoke a joint at Griffith Observatory, right?
Absolutely, yeah. What else is it for?
Okay, good. I mean, I know it's early, but...
Yeah. No,
I know Rick's down, you know what I'm saying?
I passed a guy smoking crack in an alley in Santa Monica the other day. A guy with a ponytail smoking crack in Santa Monica.
I'd rather wait for the weekend for that, John.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll talk about
it. It's only Wednesday, yeah.
After the show. Find me at youtube.com/RubinReport and twitter.com/
I miss having you on my radio, but I'm so glad you've got a show, and it's just so great following you. And
would you just, you got to get out here more often so you can come on my show.
And now you're like this perfect looking LA dude, and it's so revolting to me.
We became friends like the day I moved out here.
I know.
I was like, I'm becoming friends with
you. No, you had me on your
show,
and I threw down what the Bible says about LGBT people, and then.
That's true. You were on my the LGBT radio show on Sirius, and it was by far the biggest response we ever got.
Well, that's because they thought I was K.D. Lang. Rick Overton, I'm giving you the last minute of the show. How can people follow you in your work, sir?
At Overview, my podcast on iTunes and Sideshow Network, and rickoverton.net, and at Rick Overton on Twitter.
We got every call on the air today. I'm so proud of ourselves.
Nailed
Rick
it.
Overton and I are performing tonight in Santa Monica. It's all over. We're actually playing in a church, in the church in Ocean Park. It's called the Progressive Agenda for Comedy Nation. It's a great lineup. Come on down and laugh and party by the beach tonight with us. Sexy Liberal Comedy Tours hitting Chicago on the 26th of April. We're sold out this month in Madison. But Albuquerque, we're finally coming back to Pope Joy Hall in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Come out and see us. It's been a great week.
Thanks for having me on, John.
You know what?
This guy's a pro.
Most of all, to the viewers on Free Speech TV and the listeners on the internet and on the radio for being so welcoming to me. Had a beautiful week. It's really a pleasure and an honor. Folks, keep on fighting, man. People got to lead so the leaders will follow. And I'm just so proud to have been sucking up to an audience this brilliant and sexually deviant for an entire week. God bless y'all. Have a great weekend.